first speaker today is going to be Margaret Waters, our Vice President. And of course, I'm really excited about having Margaret and the rest speak about the DNA project that we have. And she's going to speak and give a presentation, introduction to using autosomal DNA testing for genealogical research. Okay, Margaret, thank you.
I think it's the
way it's sweeps the projector, comes to life. All right, this morning, I hope what I am going to do is be able to help all of you understand a little bit more about autosomal DNA for genealogy. This is the newest type of genealogical DNA test. It's only been in use for a couple of years. Most of you are probably more familiar with the Y-DNA testing, which can be done on the males. It tests the paternal line only. You can do a mitochondrial DNA test and look at your maternal line, but that's only two of your multiple family lines. What the autosomal test allows us to do is look at all of our ancestors. That makes it a bit more complicated to understand. It's not quite as straightforward, but hopefully we're going to take care of that this morning. A quick review, just a little bit of science. The DNA is a molecule that's in every cell of our body. It is, if you think of it as an instruction manual for each of us, it's sort of specialized to each of us, although like 99% of it we share identically to everybody else. But it's made up of only four base pairs, and we won't worry about the names of the pairs. Just think of it as being a book written with four letters, A, T, C, and G. Each molecule of DNA is about 3 billion pairs or letters long, so that's a whole lot of material. It divides itself into 46 chromosomes in humans. Now, these chromosomes pair up so that you actually have 23 pairs of chromosomes. You get one part of each pair from each of your parents. One chromosome from dad, one from mom. 22 of the chromosomes are what is known as the autosomal chromosomes. The other two are your X and X if you're female, or your X and Y if you're male. So the autosomal test is going to go along and look at the information on those 22 autosomal paired chromosomes. This is a graphic representation of your chromosomes. They are merely numbered, 1 to 22. As I said, you get half of each pair because DNA is always paired. Half from dad and half from mom. And then, of course, your X and Y chromosomes. These are not looked at in the autosomal test. So if there is still reason in the right circumstances to do the Y DNA testing, because it looks only at this chromosome. These chromosomes come from everybody in your ancestry, back to a certain point. Now, what happens when fertilization takes place? Your parents each have their paired chromosomes. They split. And one half of the chromosome from dad comes together and joins one half of mom's, and they match up. Now, if they just matched up perfectly, you'd have mom's over here and dad's over here. But when they come together, there's a crossover or recombination that happens. And that just means that the segments, the pieces, the pairs of each side of the chromosome sort of wraps around the other one. And that, in effect, breaks it into segments, so that instead of having a solid segment from one parent, you've got part of one from one parent and the word of one from the other. It's these segments that we're going to be looking at. Now, if you think about it, mom and dad have the same thing going on with their chromosomes. Their chromosomes had the same recombination happen. So they got, their chromosomes are made up of segments from their parents. The effect of this is that a child will share exactly 50% of their DNA with each parent. The same child will share about 25% of their DNA with each grandparent. You've got four grandparents. Now notice that when we get past parents, I'm going to say about 25%. Because of the recombination, the segments can vary just a little bit in length. The randomness of it, that's what makes this tend to be more unique. It gives us our individual characteristics. You may get a little more than your sibling did from grandma, or a little less. That part is random, but on average, it's going to be 25%. When you go back another generation, obviously you've got twice as many ancestors, so you have, on average, 12.5% from each of your great-grandparents. And then going back to your second great-grandparents, you've got 6.25% on average of DNA from each of them. Now, at this point, because we're talking about the segments that have recombined with each generation, with your second great-grandparents, you have 16 of them. These segments are still long enough to be recognizable as coming from a particular ancestor. Now, that's, unfortunately, the segment doesn't show up and say, I'm from great-grandma Jones. When I say recognizable, it means that anyone else who descends from a particular couple in that generation will also possibly have a segment that's long enough to be a significant match to you. Once you get to third, fourth, and fifth great grandparents, obviously because of the math, the segments are getting shorter and shorter with each generation. You will have some traces of DNA from some of your ancestors that far back, but not from all of them. This is pretty much the cutoff point where you're going to have recognizable segments from everybody. So this second great grandparents are particularly important to be able to look back that far. So in talking about segments, that's what we're doing when we're working with autosomal DNA. The DNA test is run, and what they do is they look at your particular set of A, C, G, and T's, and whatever patterns you have, and the computer runs through the database, and it looks for other people that have that same sequence of letters in a segment that may be close to you or overlap in a significant way. So, remember, the segments get shorter the further back you go into some of those ancestors. Segments are measured in centimorgans. That's a unit of measure. We don't need to know exactly what it is. Scientists have figured it out. But what we need to know is that any segments in your matches that are over 10 centimorgans long are going to be somebody that you're related to. And as a cousin, and I say cousin, I'm going to use that term to include parents, siblings, nieces, nephews, anybody that you're genetically related to, if you and someone else share a segment that's over 10 centimeters long, you're going to have a common ancestral couple. If you knew all of your ancestors, you should be able to identify. Under 5 centimorgans, the chances of being, if you have a match that's under 5 centimorgans, that could be a common ancestral couple, or it could be just a random match. Segments are getting short enough at that point that, you know, various unrelated people might happen to have that same run of base pairs in there. So The segments in between 5 and 10, some people use 8 as the cutoff, can go either way. They can be matches that are actually genealogical matches, or they could be random matches. And the segments are identified by matching SNPs. Now, the SNPs are the mutations where an A perhaps changes to a T, or C changes to a G. So in that long string of letters that represent your DNA, when one of those mutations happen, that's a SNP. And it's those patterns of SNPs that the matching is looking for, that you and someone else have that same particular pattern of changes along a stretch of your DNA. So obviously the more changes within that segment, the more SNPs that are there, the more significant the match, because that tends to make it more unique. When you get your test results from Family Tree DNA, and that's definitely the company that we need you to get tested with if you want to participate in the Orangeburg Project, because they're the company that pulls the data for us and gives us the support doing the comparisons and all. What you're going to get is, when you get your test results, they give you your password. And you go to your personal web page there, and you're going to get a whole list of names. Of course, I've got a blank out here. And you're going to sit there and you're going to look, oh my goodness, what in the world does that tell me? Because odds are you're not going to recognize very many of these names in your match list. If you only get one or two names here, you will need to go up here to the, actually it's not there, there's a place in here. If you have second cousin closer matches, it will only show you those matches initially, and you have to select show all your matches. So once you select show all your matches, you're going to get something that looks like this. Now, let's take a little bit closer look at what this is telling us. The first column over there is obviously the name of your match. And as I said, you won't recognize most of these names. How many of us can name all of our first cousins by their current name that they're going by today? Right? How many of you can name all your second cousins? If anybody raises their hands, that's impressive. Most of us are lucky if we know a few of our third or fourth cousins. But believe me, we've got a lot of them out there we've never heard of. And we can go to fifth and sixth cousins. And because of all the name changes and the daughters coming through the line, we're not going to know who these people are just by their names. But they match us. They have some piece of DNA in common. So, going back to looking at the report, the next column is the match date. Now, the report, the default arrangement of the report puts your closest matches at the top of the list. So on your first page, and you, these names show up 10 to the page, you may have, don't have a lot of matches. I only started with 7 pages, but I've heard people that end up with 30 or 40 pages of matches, which is 300 or 400 matches. So it's a lot to scroll through. It's a lot to take in. When you've worked with the material a while, and you don't get a notification, I don't believe there's anybody to get a notification for new matches on this. So after you've worked with the material, and you want to find out who your newest matches are, all of these column headings you can click on and sort your results by that column heading. So if you knew, for example, someone's name and wanted to find him and didn't want to scroll through your 7 or 10 or 30 or 50 pages, single click on the name column. We'll sort those names A to Z by surname, double-click on reverse the order, Z to A. Same thing with match date. The first click is going to sort that, your oldest matches to your newest ones. If you want to see your newest matches, click that column twice, and your newest matches will show up at the top of your list on the first or second page. So that's the way to keep up with your newest matches. two poems on relationships. Now, a lot of people look at these, and particularly if it's somebody they know, they say, well, wait a minute, that person isn't my fifth cousin or whatever. That's my third cousin. I know. These are suggested relationships. This is merely the computer taking your test results and comparing it to that person's and saying, on average, this is how these two people would be related. And that's based on how many matching segments you have and how many SNPs are in those segments. If you've got two same ancestor two or more places in your chart, you're going to have more of his DNA or hers than if you only had him once. So that's going to affect the results. So don't get too hung up on these relationship averages. They give you a clue. They give you a starting point. Obviously, a third to fifth cousin is somebody you might want to track down before you go looking for a fifth to remote cousin. You can click, like I say, and get your closest matches up top, although that's how the page initially shows. So, the next columns pertain to the stunum organs. Remember, that tells you how long the matching segment is. The shared stunum organs are the total of all the segments where you match this person. And then this is the longest block. Initially, you're going to want to just look at this longest block. And this is where, if it's over 10, here's 15, here's 19. That's significant. These people share a common ancestral couple with them. 8, that's sort of in the middle range. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. I think Family Tree only shows longest blocks and puts them on your match list here if they're over 7.5 centimeters. So this is part of the information you want to look at to understand what you're looking at. Now over here, if you know exactly how you're related to this person, you can click on this and put your own, well, I think there's a drop-down list there, say exactly how that person is related. Second cousin, once removed, or whatever. So you can keep track of it there and know who that person is. And finally, over here is a list of surnames that have been provided by the participant in the project. Now, you'll see a lot of them have no surnames. That can be somewhat frustrating. Even when you have a list of surnames, well, if we see amongst that list of surnames Rickenbacker or Schuler or Felder, we probably want to jump on. But if there's Smiths and Jones and Carters, we don't know whether those are Orangeburg people or not. You can click on the person's name over on the left, and a little pop-up window will show up and give you a little bit more information. Occasionally, not often enough, but sometimes people will download their GEDCOM to Family Tree, and if they do, none of these happen to have it, but there'll be a little GEDCOM symbol under there you can click on and look at your GEDCOM. Because the first thing you want to start doing is trying to figure out how the heck this person whose name you don't recognize is related to you. What you're going to want to be looking for is the ancestral couple, the most recent common ancestral couple you have in mind. Because this is autosomal DNA, you're primarily going to be focusing on couples, because remember, the DNA is in each chromosome is paired, and half of that, this match could come from your dad's line, or it could come from your mother's line. And when you get back to the common ancestral couple, the DNA could come from either side of that couple. Until you do additional work, it won't be immediately obvious which side of the couple it came from. So, the next thing you may want to look at, and this is under the Family Finder tab here. This is the page you come to initially. But under that tab is something called chromosome browser. This is interesting to look at and helpful. It gives you a list on the various pages of all of your matches. This particular one has 82. You have to scroll down and you have to click through pages. You can click out here different matches up to 5 at a time, and it will show in color on this little graphic representation of your chromosomes how you match that person. In other words, this person matches, those three people all match on that same segment. If you take and hold the cursor on your computer over that, it will tell you, obviously, these are the chromosomes, 1 through 22, on chromosome 17. You hold the cursor over that, it will tell you the segment number of where that match starts and where it ends. Now, for those of you who don't like numbers, this is going to drive you crazy, because all of this information is just strings of numbers. But it's helpful. So this is one way you can start looking graphically at how long, that's a significant match right there. That's pretty long. If you hold the cursor over it, it'll tell you how many centimeters. You know, some of these other ones are short. This is just a closer up example where this is one person you clicked off here. This is obviously someone fairly closely related. One person can match you on 3 or 4 different chromosomes. If you actually had your parent and you both tested and compared them in here, you're going to light this thing up like a Christmas tree. It's a very good idea to have your parents tested if they're alive, because that will help you separate out anybody that matches you on dad's side versus mom's side if you know where your parents match. Siblings will have a lot of matches here. So, the test results you get are going to be a list of people who share some segment of DNA in common with you. You won't recognize most of the names. Some will have provided a list of their family surnames, others won't have. Some will respond to emails, others won't. With Family Tree DNA, you have the ability to contact by email all of your matches. Those of you who've gotten your test results already may have had the experience of, before you've hardly gotten your test results, you've had people emailing you saying, "Hey, we're cousins, how do we match?" you know, it just depends on the individual matches. What can you do to increase the possibility of finding out how you match these folks? Well, the first thing you can do is get your own ancestral information in a nice, concise form. My favorite way of looking at ancestral information, because all you need to know initially is who your first 31 ancestors are, through your fifth generation. Now, initially, when you're trying to establish a common ancestral couple with somebody, you don't need all the data about kids and when they were married and all that. Keep it simple. If you have a very simple chart of your ancestors and send it to your matches, you will get more responses out of them, because they can look at this and say, "Oh, well, this guy is one of my ancestors too." If they have to wade through a lot of data, some of them will, some of them won't. Creating a chart like this also helps you. Most of us that work on our genealogy tend to focus on a couple of families. We've got a couple of favorite families. We've got all our information in our genealogy software. It's a good exercise to go back and pull that out and actually work with these names and get these people's identity in your head. I mean, after all, you've got DNA from all of them, so you might as well get on good terms with them. Basic information is just their name, what year they were born, where they were born, what year they died, and where they died. And the birth and death information is just to help sort people with the same names and put them in a location. Because a lot of times, just the name, even with the years, isn't enough. Were they in the same place my ancestor was? If you're trying to figure out who matches God. Well, if one was in New England and one was in South Carolina, no, that probably isn't really match. You've got to find two people or couples that were in the same area. So I would definitely encourage you to list on a chart of some sort, and this is just an Excel spreadsheet, everyone through your fifth generation. And if you don't know them, put in unknown, whatever the surname is for the males, or unknown female. Make some estimates, because my dad's parents were both from Germany. I know that the unknowns in his immediate line were all in Germany. I mean, you know, they were there for back in the 1500s, the ones who were chased. So I don't know who these people are, but I've got their DNA, and I'm going to have some matches through those lines out there. One of the possibilities of this is that I can find out the names of who those people might be. Go ahead and list, if you can go into your sixth generation, go ahead and list as many of them as you can, because you're going to have DNA from some of them. And by the time you get to your seventh generation, I don't put a blank for everybody, because there'd be more blanks than there would be filled in things. But think about creating some sort of chart like this. This is the kind of information, like I say, you can share Gen Coms, you can send, you know, files from your software, but that's a lot of information to look at. This is also the type of information I like to get when I put together the information that goes on the OGSGS website, which once you've signed up at Family Tree for the Orangeburg District Project, the next thing you should do is get on the OGSGS website and post your information on the Family Finder page. That's a password-protected site so that we keep the information somewhat private. And I'm the one that you would send your family information to, hopefully in a format like this, but I will take it any way you'll send it. And I take that information and convert it to what we use on the website. Now, these are just examples of some of the things that, this is my particular ancestral line, some of the things that I want to know from this autosomal test. I've got a fifth generation female. I know her first name, know when she was born, know when she died. I've got a photograph of this woman, but I don't know her last name. I think it might be Davis, so I'm really looking for a bunch of Davis descendants to get out there and get this test done, see if I can match someone and prove her name is Davis. Maybe it wasn't, you know, maybe I'll find somebody else. I've got another one. We don't know anything about her parents. I mean, we can assume her dad was a Bonnet, but we don't know anything about her mother. There's another good hole for me to try to work to fill up. So these are some of the things that we're going to hope that this autosomal testing can do. So, what you need to do is create a concise list of your ancestors. If you've ordered the test and waiting for the results, go ahead and work on that list while you're waiting for your results. Another thing that helps is start identifying as many of your cousins as you can. While I was waiting on my test results, I sat down, I made a list of my first cousins. Okay, that was pretty easy. I knew all their names, except one of them had gotten married last year, and I couldn't remember her name. Yeah. This is the challenge. Second cousins. All right, I have second cousins, both sides of the family. Well, that took a little more time, and I didn't quite get them all. Third cousins. One way you can do this, and I have spotted a couple of people that might be related. Back in the 50s and 60s, when people did, well, they still did family genealogy, all the descendants of, if you've got some of those books on your shelf and they follow them through up into newer generations, start paying attention to the surnames that married into that family from the descendants of that couple. I've gone through on my reason over line, I know that some of the daughters married Barnes and Nicholsons and stuff like that. Those aren't my direct ancestors, but maybe some of those names show up in my list of matches. And I can write and say, by any chance, is your descended from so-and-so? You know, so start getting more familiar with your potential cousins. Join the Orangeburg District Project. I can't emphasize this enough. When we put all of our data together, it is so much easier to find our matches. If we're all participating, we all share enough minds that, you know, we should all be in the same data pool, and that's what the Orangeburg District Project is. Just your family finder results put you in the data set of everybody that has been tested the family tree. By joining the Orangeburg District Project, you also go into a data set that is just other people who've joined the project. So it's easier to figure out how we're related amongst the smaller group of people. It won't identify all of your matches if you've got ancestors outside of Orangeburg District, but it'll certainly help you if you're ones from Orangeburg, and that's what we're interested in. You will have to, when you start working with your test results, you will have to keep track of multiple contacts and conversations. For Pete's sake, don't email 10 of your matches all the same night. Because if even 4 or 5 of you answer you back, you're going to get so confused. Yeah. Well, who am I talking to? Who that is? This is a long-term project. When you get that list of matches, it's going to be overwhelming. It will also probably give you enough research material to keep you busy for the rest of your life. You will never figure out all the matches on that list. But look at the possibilities of what you can do. Just take your time. Take a deep breath. Start with it. Have fun, and hopefully you can find some new ancestors. Okay, at this point, I will be glad to take questions, if there are any, or if we've got time, and I will be going over another more in-depth, you know, what you can do with it this afternoon. So this hopefully just helps you understand what it is you're looking at when you've got your results there. Questions?
What does it cost, Margaret?
The normal price for it's the Family Finder test at FamilyTreeDNA.com. The regular price is $289. Several times a year, they will put it on sale for $199. They've actually already had 2 sales this year, surprisingly. Pressure from other companies that are doing this now are probably going to create more sales. But $289 is the regular price. And it's the Family Finder test as opposed to the Y test or the mitochondrial test. If you've had the Y or the mitochondrial with Family Tree, you can ask them to run the test on the sample that you've already submitted. You don't necessarily have to submit a new sample.
You just click on upgrade.
You just click on upgrade and do an upgrade to the Family Finder test. Do you have questions?